Welcome back to Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bullbarch and Matt Douglas with you up until 6:37 this evening. And then it's time for some Cleveland Indians baseball. Speaking of Cleveland, we've got one of Cleveland's finest, Cleveland storyteller Dan Rominski, on the line with us right now. Dan's going to have a presentation on the famous and infamous Woman of Millionaire's Row, which you can hear at the Peter Miller Museum coming up here in just a few days. And Dan's on the line with us right now. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Well, we appreciate you joining us here. Now, for those maybe who aren't so familiar with the history behind Millionaire's Row, and again, I think it's fascinating, especially for guys my age who maybe have only heard about Millionaire's Row but don't necessarily know the history behind it. Before we get in to the Women of Millionaire's Row, if you could just kind of shed some light on Millionaire's Row, where it was located exactly, and some of the history behind it.
Yeah, it's a good question. Millionaire's Row was on Euclid Avenue, and it was over 4 miles, which I think surprises a lot of people. It ran from initially Public Square out past our Cleveland Clinic, which is about East 105th Street. And over that 4 mile stretch, we had over 250 mansions on beautiful lots. Some of them were as big as 6 acres, beautiful lawns, elm trees arching over the avenue, churches mixed in. Some of the mansions were as big as 50,000 square feet, to give you an idea of how big they were. One mansion in particular, Sam Andrews, who was a founder of Standard Oil, used over 100 servants to service the mansion on a daily basis. I think the fact that's astounding is over one half of the world's millionaires lived in Cleveland, Ohio at one time. Most of them on Euclid Avenue, Millionaire's Row. Some people ask me, you know, Dan, who called Millionaire's Row the most beautiful, grandest avenue in all the world? And it was none other than Mark Twain, who lived on the avenue with a family called Severance. The Severance facility today houses our Cleveland Orchestra. So that gives you a little background. It stuns people. It was much grander, much bigger, much longer. Made Cleveland the wealthiest city in all the world in 1885.
That's crazy to think you've got mansions that have servants up to 100 working inside of them. Dan, how does that all get started? Did somebody move to the area and just tell friends and everyone sort of rushed in after them?
Well, Euclid Avenue was a stagecoach trail that went initially from Cleveland to Buffalo. Before that, it was an Indian trail. The primary residential street in Cleveland was going to be Superior Avenue, but that became commercial very quickly. So initially, after the Civil War, people wanted to live close to the center of town, and Millionaire's Row actually started on Public Square. It's one of those things that was kind of epidemic. It was the place to be if you were wealthy and successful in Cleveland, and we had over 400 families that were known throughout the world for their expertise in various areas. So it's much like neighborhoods today. Every city has its grand neighborhood, and again, if you were successful, this is a place you wanted to be, and you built your mansion.
Cleveland storyteller Dan Rominski is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. If we can stick with that for just another moment here, if we could talk about the impressiveness of that area. It's really incredible to me, Dan, when you take a look at that era and just the wealth that was in this area during that era, too. I saw something earlier today that the concentration of wealth was really unparalleled, as the tax valuation of the mansions along the avenue far exceeded the valuation of New York's Fifth Avenue in the late 19th century. That's just incredible.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, people always thought New York was the grandest. It wasn't. It was Cleveland. And a lot of that had to do with the linear status, over 4 miles. And so you had property value plus mansion value. We had more mansions, I believe, than any other avenue in the world at that time. So it gained world recognition. There was a thing called postcards back then that would feature a mansion on the front and advertising on the back, and those postcards were distributed throughout the world. So we have one instance where folks from Russia came over here to paint a picture for a postcard. Made Cleveland a worldwide network, and the people that lived on Millionaire's Row, like a Rockefeller or a Hanna or a Mather, they were international celebrities, and people in Cleveland would wait just to see Rockefeller go to church. It would be much like we would wait for a movie star today or a sports celebrity to just get a glimpse. And this happened thousands and thousands of times. So not only were we locally known, but we were known throughout the United States and throughout the world. And you are correct. Probably at that point, the greatest concentration of wealth, at least in the country.
Well, Dan, your talk coming up later this week at the Peter Miller House and Museum in Avon Lake is going to revolve around the famous and infamous women of Millionaire's Row. What specifically will be discussed?
Well, we picked out three women. It was a suggestion by my wife, Jane. I have six stories that I do, and she approached me a couple years ago and said, you know, you don't specifically talk about the women, and that might be nice. And I thought it was a good idea. We put the story together and put our press release out, and we were getting calls from women's clubs all over greater Cleveland asking me to do the story. But we picked out one woman who was definitely famous and known throughout the world. We picked out one that was truly infamous and somewhat evil, and then we picked out one that was both famous and infamous. And oddly enough, when I gave a talk in the mansion that she used to live in, her ghost showed up one night. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about.
Well, you talk about some of them being a little bit evil. When you say evil, I mean, were these people stealing from the poor, or what? How far are we going with the evil word?
Well, the evil one was a gal by the name of Cassie Chadwick, and she was a swindler, and she gained national attention. She basically would cash bad checks with the banks, and she migrated from Canada to Cleveland, and then Ashtabula, Toledo, back to Cleveland, and wound up marrying Dr. Chadwick, who was a quite well-known doctor, had a mansion on Euclid Avenue. So Cassie Chadwick, the swindler, wound up on Euclid Avenue and used her trade to borrow money from Cleveland banks under the auspices that she was Andrew Carnegie's illegitimate daughter. And she drew up paperwork, looked authentic, and many Cleveland banks lent her money up to somewhere between $5 and $15 million during her career.
Wow. It's crazy, too, when you take a look at some of these stories. And again, we're speaking with Dan Rominski, Cleveland storyteller. For those in the Avon Lake area, you can see Dan. He is going to host the famous and infamous Woman of Millionaire's Row at the Peter Miller House Museum in Avon Lake this coming Monday, July 10th at 7 o'clock. When you look back at some of the other stories surrounding Millionaire's Row, you know, it's not all the stuff that you may read about. There were some other evil things going on behind the scenes also. And I know it was mentioned in Alan Dutka's book of Misfortune on Cleveland's Millionaire Row, talking about the story of James Potter, you know, the manager of a prominent Euclid Avenue apartment building. Apparently he gave his family cough medicine that was laced with poison. He killed the entire family, including himself. Any of these stories, will they be discussed at all?
Not really. As far as the three women, we won't bring those in. We're going to specifically dwell on the three women. The most famous, in my opinion, was a gal by the name of Mrs. Mather, Flora Stone Mather. And the reason I picked her is because of her charity work. She either started or belonged to some 35 charities. The Mathers were the wealthiest family on the row after Rockefeller left for New York. And my audiences are always interested, well, what were they really worth? Well, back at the turn of the century, dollars, Mather was worth $100 million, making him the wealthiest in Ohio. And they believed in charity. They did a lot of church work, believed in charity. Mather was instrumental in putting together our university hospital, which is quite known throughout the world. And Mrs. Mather spent a lot of her time developing the Flora Stone Mather College, which became part of Case Western Reserve today. Her father, Amasa Stone, was a railroad builder and built bridges for the railroads and became quite wealthy. So she grew up in the lap of luxury, as did her husband. And what I loved about the story is they were just so thoroughly dedicated to charity, and established a lot of the charities that we're familiar with today. And, you know, the Mather name doesn't generally come up that much anymore. But Millionaires Row is not all glitz and everything. The row, almost in its entirety, had charity on their mind, and they were raised that they could make as much money as possible. But when you were all done, you had to give back to society in a large way. So the results that we got as Clevelanders today were our Museum of Art, which is world famous, our Cleveland Orchestra and Severance Hall, our Science Center, our hospitals, the Cleveland Clinic, University Hospital, and our Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and many, many other charities that are still around today. So I think we have a debt to these people in terms of the arts and a lot of things that sometimes we take for granted today.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Dan, it sounds like we owe a lot to the folks who lived here on Millionaires Row for helping build up Cleveland to become the city it is today.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Cleveland Foundation is another one that is the biggest foundation of its kind in the world. Also, they had influence in starting our, at that time it was Case Institute of Technology, Western Reserve University, Hiram University, and they also supported a lot of universities down south just after the slaves were freed, offering education. So they went beyond Cleveland in their charity. The biggest giver, of course, was John D. Rockefeller, who gave away supposedly nearly $1 billion during his lifetime, and had major influence in starting medical centers and research and the arts and parks and, you know, everything that we associate with charities. So I'm kind of on this mission to make this known that we are very grateful to these folks for the legacy and the fact that they saw into the future and not only started these things, but they set up endowments so that these instruments would last well over 100 years.
Dan, just out of curiosity, you know, what kinds of things do you do to prepare for discussions such as this and presentations such as this to discuss events that happened over 100 years ago?
Well, I basically start with research, and that comes in various forms. I know relatives now of people that lived on Millionaires Row, so I get a lot of archives from families or stories. We go down to the various historical societies and pull records, and I generally start out with 400 or 500 pages of research, and I scan it. I'm always looking for the good story, something that would not only be informative but entertaining. You know, one of the ones I found, which people see me with joy, is the Cleveland's greatness was involved with a little candy, and that candy was Lifesaver, and people are kind of surprised that Lifesaver was invented in Cleveland by Clarence Crane and was eventually bought by a fellow named Ed Noble. And Ed Noble took the candy up to New York and saved over $30 million over the Great Depression. And he bought another little company, which we know today as ABC, American Broadcasting Company. So a little candy led to kind of greatness in a form, and that sequence of events, I think, even surprises Clevelanders. They don't associate Lifesaver or ABC necessarily with what went on here in Cleveland.
Wow, very, very fascinating stuff. Dan, we'll cut you loose on this. If folks are interested in hearing you speak, where can they go to get more details and find out about ticket information?
They can go to our website, clevelandhistorylessons.com, or they can email me at dan@clevelandhistorylessons.com, and I'd be happy to talk to them. Or if they have trouble getting tickets or whatever, we do some 60 talks a year, they can call me or email me directly.
Dan, we appreciate the time very much. Very fascinating discussion and a lot of fun to talk to you about Millionaires Row. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All righty, that is Cleveland storyteller Dan Rominski joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.